Hey, this is Tom Cundert from Portugal.net, and you're listening to the Seleção Podcast.
Atenção na área, a bola já para Guedes, atirou, golo! 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 Golo!
I would say that's a good start to this podcast. I am your host, Danny Pinto. Welcome to episode 20 of the Seleção Podcast, a proud partner of Portugal.net. Campeões, campeões, nós somos campeões. What a great, great Sunday afternoon in the Cidade de Porto at the Dragão as Portugal become inaugural Nations League winners, a 1-0 victory over the Netherlands, and another international trophy, now two in the last 3 years for Fernando Santos, Cristiano Ronaldo, and the entire Seleção. We have a great show for you coming up on episode number 20 as we will recap the Nations League with Tom Cundert of Portugal.net. We will get his thoughts on everything that transpired in this Nations League campaign and get his thoughts on much, much more. But what a great day to be a fan of the Seleção, to be Portuguese, to have that Portuguese blood running through your veins, to see our nation and our team on the world stage getting another trophy, a very, very proud moment in our history. Who cares what the Nations League is today? What we know is that we were the first nation to conquer the Nations League, to win the Nations League, and for us to be able to celebrate that in Portugal was just the icing on the cake, and I think we should all be proud of this Seleção of Fernando Santos and everyone involved in making this campaign, this inaugural campaign of the Nations League, the success that it was. So without further ado, let's head to Portugal, the nation that now holds all of Europe's international trophies, the newly crowned Nations League champions, and of course we'll be defending our championship hopefully next summer at the Euro 2020. We are now joined by Tom Cundert of Portugal.net. Of course, you can find Tom on Twitter at Portugal1, that's PORTUGOAL1. And of course, you find all his great work and the great work of the great team at Portugal.net at Portugal.net. That's a little redundant, but still good information to send out there. Tom, how are you? And belated Feliz Dia de Portugal.
Obrigado, Danny. Yeah, I'm fine. Very well, of course, lovely weekend, as well as the extended weekend. We had special reasons to celebrate in Portugal and all around the Portuguese-speaking world. So, as you know, a lot of people said, Portugal Day came a day early this year.
I must have missed it. Did something happen this weekend, Tom?
I think there was a little game went on in Porto.
Well, yeah, let's get to that. Let's get to that game in Porto. Of course, Portugal now holding two European trophies, the only two European trophies that any international club in Europe can hold, the inaugural Nations League. There was a tweet that in your coverage, and you covered it so great. It was a bit of a subdued celebration, kind of not knowing how to feel about winning the trophy. But how was the celebration at the Estádio do Dragão once we were crowned champions?
Yeah, well, subdued by Portuguese standards and by the stat, you know, we all know Portuguese know how to celebrate. And of course, subdued compared to 3 years ago after the Euro, where they were just, you know, absolutely incredible celebrations all over the country, and justifiably so. You know, that said, we all know this isn't a World Cup, this isn't a Euro, but it's a, you know, it's a big tournament. And, you know, let's face it, every country in Europe was in it. You know, and Portugal came out top. You know, it wasn't Germany, it wasn't Spain, it wasn't England, it wasn't France, it wasn't one of these, you know, the big, all the big guys were there, but Portugal were the team that came out on top. And, you know, after the game, there was a nice celebration also at along the Avenida de Aliados and in the, you know, in the centre of Porto, in front of the Câmara Municipal, where, of course, we've all seen the pictures for you know, years on end of how Porto, FC Porto, have huge celebrations there. So it's nice to see the Seleção do that. And of course, as a few people have pointed out, those huge celebrations after Euro 2016, there was a little bit of criticism here in Portugal, the fact that the team didn't go to the north, you know, didn't go to Porto for kind of second leg of that celebration. So I think everyone was pleased that, you know, Porto, the fans from the north could get to show their passion is just as strong as everyone else's in the country when it comes to the Seleção.
We're talking with Tom Cundert of Portugal.net. We're reviewing the Seleção's victory at the inaugural Nations League here on episode number 20 of the Seleção podcast. You know, Tom, to go with the part of the subdued celebration, I guess it's one of those things where because the tournament is so new, there isn't the cachet of winning something that has been so storied like a Euro and like a World Cup. With that said, I've seen criticism, and I've seen, you know, and it comes a lot of time from where the trophy was supposed to come home. You know, once they were knocked out of a tournament, and I think Mourinho, Peixoto, who contributes to Portugal.net and others, other places as well, as soon as England was out, all of a sudden these became glorified friendlies. But if you ask anyone in Amsterdam, in Zurich, or in London, had that trophy found itself to any of those countries, I think these celebrations would be just as good, just as popular, and just as joyful as it was in Port and all over Portugal this past Sunday.
Yeah, agree 100%, Danny. And also, I think we can just see, you know, from the way the teams tackled this tournament, really right from the group stage, you know, there have been some terrific matches, and, you know, you can't even really compare them to friendlies. You know, you can see teams really going for it. I remember in the group stage, we had, of course, Portugal-Italy and the Portugal-Poland games, the first two games especially, really good matches. But, you know, all over the tournament, you know, we had that group with the Netherlands and Germany and France, terrific games in that, England and Spain. You know, you had the Belgium-Switzerland game, just fantastic games all right through it. And I think there's no doubt about it. You know, these are professional footballers. They, anytime they're playing for a trophy, especially for their country, you know, they take it seriously. And okay, it's not a Euro, but yeah, I agree with you. You know, when if any country had won this, you know, I think they would have been mightily pleased, and you know, it would have led to big celebrations. Also, I think it's very interesting that. Or it's, you know, it's a great thing for Portugal that they've won the very first one, because, you know, they can only be one winner of the inaugural Nations League. And who knows, maybe in, you know, in 20 years, 10, 20 years going down the line, if this competition goes on how it started off, it could really become a very, very big competition. And, you know, Portugal's the first one to get their name on that cup.
Absolutely. Let's get to the field now and get to the match. I think you captured it perfectly, where this was a very un-Seleção-like performance in the final against the Netherlands, where Portugal took control of the match, especially in that first half, and ended up controlling the majority of the match. What was your overall thought on the Fernandes approach and the Seleção approach to this victory?
Yeah, I think you can see a lot of people, the way they've reacted to it, a lot of people saying that this is perhaps, in some ways, the best performance Portugal have put in under Fernando Santos because it was against top quality opposition. And like you just said there, Portugal really controlled the game almost from start to finish. You know, obviously at the end, Netherlands were getting a bit desperate, you know, pushing everyone forward. It caused a bit more problems for Portugal, as you'd expect. But, you know, Portugal really took the initiative, and that's what was different. You see, Portugal so often, their kind of default, you know, strategy, especially under Fernando Santos, has been, you know, very good on the counter-attack. You know, and that even dates from before Fernando Santos. You know, they've always been a really good counter-attacking team, quite happy to soak up pressure a lot of the time. And in this match, no, they didn't do that at all. You know, they were, you know, they're playing at home. They kind of took the ball by the horns. You know, you had a very attacking lineup selected as for the Switzerland game. But I think the difference perhaps between the semi and the final was that was, you know, a very new team for the Switzerland game. And you could tell the combinations weren't really there. In the second game, you know, they started to come to the form, and you got players with the quality of Bruno Fernandes and Bernardo Silva starting to turn it on. You know, that makes for quite an exciting spectacle. And it was great to see, no doubt about it. It was great to see. Hopefully, this will kind of set a new template for Portugal. And, you know, they go into every match in this frame of mind.
Tom, you mentioned Bruno Fernandes and Bernardo Silva. Obviously, they were spotlighted in the midfield in two big matchups. And something that that fans and pundits alike have been clamoring for in the past few months, and now that we've gotten to see a little bit of a glimpse of what that could be, how did you rate them in the midfield, and what does that do to expectations, I guess, for the Seleção in the future?
I think it's very good news in terms of expectations. And Bruno Fernandes, you know, he's just had two good seasons, really, to leave out of this side. And so I think it was, you know, you could say it's a brave decision, but I would actually say it was quite an obvious decision to pick him. And I think for all the criticism which Fernando Santos gets, doesn't really matter. It's amazing, isn't it, to think he does get criticised a lot despite what he's achieved. But I think one thing nobody can criticise him about is he tends to select his team on merit. You know, on a, you know, if a player shows for their club side that they deserve to be in that 23-man squad, he picks them. If they show during a match that they're not quite doing it, he's not afraid to drop them. Bruno Fernandes, he earned his place. The game against Switzerland wasn't quite on his game, like most of the team, really, to be honest. Second game, excellent, especially first half. You know, peppering the Dutch goal with those kind of trademark efforts from distance, combining really well with Bernardo Silva. And I'll tell you one thing, Danny, these two players, they're so exciting in terms of their creativity, their football intelligence, their, you know, just their attacking just skill and technique. But there's also another very important trait which they both share. They're both really hard workers. So some people, they may be a little bit afraid of picking Fernandes and Bernardo Silva in the same team and thinking maybe that's going a bit too attacking. But you have to remember, both of these players get through a tremendous amount of defensive work. They're non-stop, you know, hard workers from start to finish. So I think that also means that I'll be very surprised if these two aren't fixtures in the Portugal, you know, in the Portugal lineup for the foreseeable future and probably for quite a few years.
We're talking with Tom Kundert of Portugal.net. Of course, you can follow Tom on Twitter at Portugal1. A man that you mentioned that had been coming under a lot of scrutiny the last few months, that was the selecionador, Fernando Santos. His approach to the semifinal and the final of the Nations League, you know, kind of differed from his approach in the past. Obviously, you mentioned, you know, merit. Everybody who was selected on that in the starting 11 for both the semifinal and the final, in my opinion, was selected on merit. But I also think that he recognized that he possibly needed to change his tactics to try to get the most out of his team. Do you think he did so knowing that, or do you think he felt maybe a little bit of pressure knowing that perhaps a negative result in either the semifinal or the final could have the whispers of those wanting to maybe see him go become louder?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a fair question. But I think, to be fair to Fernando Santos, like I just said, he's not afraid to mix things up. He's not afraid to change things. He doesn't really bow to pressure very easily and is not very stubborn, you know, like certain other coaches have been or are. And so that, you know, some coaches, they seem to make a kind of point, don't they, if they get a lot of criticism from the press or the fans, why do you keep picking X or Y? Then that just seems to kind of make them further entrenched in their position, and X and Y are picked time and time again. Fernando Santos isn't that kind of coach. And like I said, very much picking players on their merit, for the club sides and from their merit, especially from the performance they put in for the Seleção. And we saw that, for instance, with João Félix, who's had a terrific season with Benfica. A lot of people calling for his inclusion, and I think he deserved to get that starting spot against Switzerland. Didn't really happen for him against Switzerland. Perhaps not entirely his fault. Didn't get much service, but perhaps he was too nervous, or perhaps he just didn't quite fit into the team. Fernando Santos recognised that, swapped with, you know, with Gonçalo Guedes, and I think also that was a strategic move, you know, looking for a bit more pace up front, and you know, it worked out perfectly. I listened to an interview Fernando Santos gave here in the main news program yesterday, and he's always talks about balance. He says it makes no sense talking about attacking teams or defensive teams. You just have to be a very balanced team the whole time. And he felt that the team he selected for the final, given the, you know, that who Portugal would be playing and the kind of players that the Netherlands, you know, the kind of problems they'd caused Portugal, he felt that that was the most balanced lineup to go with. And well, I think the match just proved him correct.
You know, there was a point in the match where it was after Guedes had scored the goal in the 60th minute, and Portugal was defending the 1-0 lead, and they didn't get their first substitution in until about 15 minutes left in the match. And I think a lot of Portuguese fans and those who cover the Seleção, I thought, and me personally, I thought that first substitution was going to be someone like a João Moutinho or a Ruben Neves to, you know, start the protection of that lead a little bit more strongly. Yet he goes with Rafa Silva and in for Guedes, and I thought that was just a stroke of genius, and again, a little bit away from what he normally does, simply because it was an attacker for an attacker, and I thought Rafa played such a great 15-20 minutes. To me, that was an approach that I think is a refreshing look at what Fernando Santos can do with the selected team that he has, because there is so much speed, firepower, attacking style that this current crop of players has, and the fact that he didn't go for the let's sit on the lead right now, I think is something that that fans and pundits of the Seleção have been kind of clamoring for with this group from Fernando Santos.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he was electric, wasn't he, when he came on, Rafa? Just he had 15 minutes or so. He was absolutely superb. Almost any time he caught the ball, he got hold of the ball, caused absolute panic in the Dutch defence. I think maybe one reason for that also, Guedes, he also had a very good game, but I think you could see he'd kind of, you know, his battery was on low when he came off. He'd kind of run himself into the ground. And yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, he could have just kind of decided to shut up shop, try and park the bus. But no, you know, sometimes attack is the best form of defence. And that was definitely shown here, because Rafa, as soon as he got the ball, he alleviated the pressure, you know, drew quite a few fouls from the Dutch players, you know, won Portugal some time and also created danger in his own right. I suppose one thing we also have to remember is that Fernando Santos now has the tools to be able to do, you know, more attacking substitutions. For instance, Rafa, he was at Euro 2016, didn't really get much of a look in, but I think Rafa of today is a slightly different player to Rafa 2 years ago or 3 years ago. You know, he's had an absolutely brilliant season at Benfica, and you could see he was just full of confidence, and he just gave Portugal that extra zip again when they seemed to be slightly running out of attacking momentum. And, you know, made sure that the Netherlands couldn't really swamp Portugal those last 15 minutes and just bombard them with attack after attack, because Rafa, you know, was just causing problems to their own back line. And so, yeah, I think, you know, again, excellent decision by Fernando Santos to make that substitution. He's got the tools, and I think he's, you know, he's proving that he knows how to use them.
You're listening to episode number 20 of the Seleção podcast. I'm your host, Danny Pinto. We are joined by Tom Cundert of Portugal.net as we are reviewing the Nations League triumph in Port as the Seleção are inaugural winners of the Nations League. You know what, Tom? We've gone into this interview for a while now, and we have yet to mention the man who had the hat trick in the semifinal against Switzerland, that being our captain Cristiano Ronaldo. You know, obviously the focus is on the final, but what a performance he had against the Swiss in a game where, again, it was one of those things where Portugal struggled. They were, in my opinion, not the best side in that game, but yet Ronaldo, you know, for lack of a better term, bails us out. But I guess my question here is, you know, you're great at retweeting fan reaction after each match, and I found it very very telling in a good way that there was not a lot of mention of CR7 in that retweet blast, and the fact that we have our two trophies from guys or on the feet of guys named Eder and Gonçalo Guedes, to me is a positive thing, because all the weight of those trophies did not land on Ronaldo's shoulders in the final. What does that say, do you think, about where this team can go? But what does that also say about the work that Ronaldo has done in his Seleção career to get us to this point?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, the Portugal the last 15 years has really been, and I know it annoys us Portugal fans so much when people say Portugal are Ronaldo and 10 others, but you have to put, you know, if you're absolutely honest, you have to say there were several occasions when that really was almost the case, you know. And it was interesting in the semi-final, of course, I was thinking after the lineup was announced and we were excited because we were all talking about Bernardo Silva, putting him in the middle, giving Bruno Fernandes the start, giving João Félix the start. Fernando Santos did all of that. So I thought, oh, you know, this is kind of a new Portugal. But what it ended up was the old Portugal, where really we were just very reliant on Ronaldo, you know, absolute genius performance again. It was quite something being in that stadium when he completed his hat trick. And, you know, all the fans singing in unison his name, really, it was kind of, it just put goose pimples all over your skin. It was just like fantastic to see the appreciation and the deserved appreciation which he gets. But you're absolutely right. And I think in the final, he just wasn't needed, was he? He did play also his part in, I think we've seen how Ronaldo has changed quite a lot. He did quite a lot of defensive work, especially again, you might have noticed in the last 20 minutes or so when Holland were applying more pressure, you know, made quite a few good defensive headers. And I think one very telling aspect, which someone flagged up on Twitter as well, apologise, I can't remember his name at the moment, was if you look at the goal, the winning goal, great little pass by Bernardo Silva, and then you've got Gonçalo Guedes at the top of the box. Okay, it's quite a good shooting opportunity, but to the right of him, completely free of mark, you know, of his marker, is Cristiano Ronaldo. So you're thinking, almost any other player, almost any other time in the last 15 years, what would be their number one concern? Okay, make sure I get this pass absolutely perfect, so, you know, Cristiano can, you know, try and score the winning goal. Gonçalo Guedes, no, he kind of personified this new confidence of this new breed of exciting Portuguese players. He just looked at that ball, put his head down, and he said, I'm going to have a crack here. And he just produced that, you know, fantastic shot, which was just too hot to handle for, you know, the Dutch keeper. And that was it. Portugal were in the lead. And so, yeah, that's one thing which makes this so exciting, isn't it, Danny? This is, you know, it's not Portugal being over-reliant on Ronaldo anymore. There are a lot of other threats, but Having said that, Cristiano Ronaldo in himself is still such a big, you know, such a big asset to have in the team. And so, you know, it's kind of the best of both worlds. So it just makes things very exciting going forward.
You know, it's a very exciting time for the Selecao. Obviously, the getting another trophy on the mantle is always great. But individually, so much talent now is at Fransson's beck and call. And one of those guys is a guy that we've mentioned already. And, you know, the man who set up both winning goals in the semi and the final, and that's Bernard Silva. Tom, could we have two players in the running for a Ballon d'Or, shortlist? I mean, it's such a weird concept to think about. You know, maybe 3-4 years ago, but Bernard Silva with his year at Man City, I believe I saw something on Twitter where it said Bernard Silva professional trophy carrier. I mean, he's had such a wonderful year. And has arrived on the world stage, a concept that I thought we probably never would have seen is coming to fruition, where Portugal may have two Ballon d'Or finalists here in the near future.
Yeah, is absolutely outstanding, isn't he? Bernardo, you say he's had a brilliant year. He has. He's had an absolutely amazing year. But if you think about it, he's had an absolutely brilliant 3 years, because he was, a key player when Monaco won the French League, you know, and that was quite a, thinking about it, it's probably one of the stories of the last few years in European football. You've got PSG, it's kind of limitless, you know, amount of money they have. And they were pipped to the title by Monaco. And a big reason for that was Bernardo Silva. And of course, then he went to Man City last year, didn't quite, make the full impact, although he played over 40 games or so, although a lot of them were from the substitutes bench, and won the league. And then this season, like you say, is just a professional trophy carrier. He's just won everything there was to win in England, all the domestic trophies. Also got the Manchester City Player of the Season award, and he was named in the Premier League Team of the Year. Quite a few people, including Pep Guardiola, insisted he should have actually won the best player in the Premier League this season. I suppose the only thing which was missing was he wasn't really quite doing it for the national team. You know, he had, by and large, pretty disappointing performances for Portugal. You know, you could probably count the number of really strong performances for the Selecao on one hand before this tournament. But he really seems to have come of age. You know, he won deservedly, in my opinion, player of the tournament. He was superb in both matches. In the final especially, I think he was, hands down the best player on the pitch. And who knows, Danny? Yeah, maybe you're right. He's only 24 years old. You know, he just seems to have all the technique, all the skills to just be a top player, I think. Well, he already is, of course, a top player. But I think, one thing which maybe sets him apart is perhaps something which is a little bit like Cristiano Ronaldo. He's just got absolutely the right attitude. You could tell the way he speaks, the way he plays, the way he works. Everything he does is geared towards making the utmost of his considerable talents. And so, yeah, it's just, we're so blessed in Portugal to have had this phenomenon called Cristiano Ronaldo for the last decade and a half. And, who knows, perhaps people would talk about Bernardo Silva in similar terms in about 10 or 15 years.
You know, we've gone hot and heavy with the offensive side of things, and being so happy to see how Fernando Sanchez has used the plethora of options that he now has at his disposal in the attack. But I think we'd be remiss if we didn't praise that back four in these last two matches. I thought Rafael Guerreiro and Nelson Smith were very solid on both the left back and the right back. There's obviously a star in the making in Ruben Dias. I thought he solidified himself as one of the future center backs of the Selecao. I know a lot of people have mentioned him as probably a future captain of the Selecao at such a young age and with the temperament of a veteran. But to me, a very unsung hero in all of this is Josef Font, who came in for Pep, who was injured in the Swiss semifinal. He came in under duress in that semifinal, and then was as solid as anyone could have asked for in the final against the Netherlands. How did you see the back four, and specifically the center backs in these two matches for the Slesson?
Yeah, well, I think you said it all there, Danny. Can't really add to that. I was very pleased to see Nelson Semedo also doing well, because he's another player who hasn't quite hit the heights for the Seleção. It's even a bit of a surprise that he was chosen ahead of João Cancelo. But again, I think there's no doubt Fernando Santos got that spot on, because he was excellent in both matches. Semedo, I was very pleased with Guerreiro as well. I think, especially after last year's World Cup, which he had a bit of a forgettable World Cup, to be honest. This is interesting. These two games, I think he didn't venture forward quite as much as he usually does, but he was very solid defensively, which of course is is your number one job as a left back. You're right, Ruben Dias, absolutely outstanding game in the final. And yeah, he's 22 years old. He's already played over 80 times for Benfica. He's already, I think, played 11 or 12 times for the full Portugal side. So yeah, he's going to be a fixture for years to come. And Font, yeah, you're right to flag him up as well, because I think this kind of what happened to him this tournament, and I suppose the last year or so, is almost like a microcosm of his career, because he's just had to really work hard for everything which he's achieved. And it's all come to him quite late. He was still playing lower league football in England, I think in his mid to late 20s. He only got into the Premier League, I think, 26, 27 years old, maybe even older, for Southampton. Became a cult hero there and a captain. And, he's really had to work hard for everything he's achieved. When his career seemed to be kind of meandering to a close about a year ago, when he went from West Ham to China, but went back to Lille in France, helped them have a tremendous season. They finished second, got back in the Champions League. José Font was called up. And again, when the time came to it, he, like you said, put in a faultless performance. And, Portugal's two finals in the last 3 years, two bits of major silverware, which they've won, he's been there at centre-back, putting in faultless performances both times. So, really pleased for him as well.
You're listening to episode number 20 of the Slesson podcast as we are reviewing the Nations League triumph in Porto. I am your host, Danny Pinto. I am joined by Tom Kundert of Portugal.net. Of course, you can follow Tom at Portugal1 on Twitter. Well, Tom, with the Nations League now behind us, the focus of the Slesson now shifts to qualifying for Euro 2020. Obviously, we have the reprieve of winning our Nations League group to get an automatic playoff spot. But obviously, that's something that I would assume that we all would try to avoid if at all possible. But with six qualifying games left, two in September, two in October, two in November, from the performances that we have seen in the Nations League, what is it that we should expect to see from the Slesson in these matches in order to get to Euro 2020 next year?
Yeah, well, it's not a given, isn't it? After those two disappointing draws to kick off the qualification campaign. And so, Portugal are going to have to be on their game. Of course, they should be going into it in full of confidence after winning the Nations League, and especially the manner they won it in the final. So, they're going to have to play well. And especially, Ukraine, they seem to be flying. They seem to be playing very well at the moment. Serbia, a tough team. Both of those away matches, of course. I think in some ways it might actually help Portugal that they're away, because I don't suppose that Serbia or Ukraine can just completely sit back, as the home team. And of course, we all know Portugal tend to play better when a team comes out, and they tend to have difficulty breaking down teams who are very defensive. So hopefully, they'll find some gaps and, they're going to have to turn those results around, because it's going to be interesting. Three-way fight, really, for two spots between Ukraine, Serbia and Portugal. And, I think it's good that Portugal are going to have to be on top of their game, hopefully. They'll make it into one of those two front spots, and they'll also going to, you know, the big tournament, defending their title, having played, you know, having had to play at a good level. You know, I think it would have been perhaps detrimental to Portugal if they, you know, if they just kind of breezed through this group and then the last three or four games didn't even mean anything. No, I think they're going to have to be at the top of their game really until the end of the qualification campaign.
Tom, I can't thank you enough for coming on and joining us and breaking down the final and the triumph that was the Nations League in Port. You know, obviously, Tom, there was some news that came about during the Nations League semifinal and final where, it seems that the Spanish FA and the Portuguese Federation, they are going to start the groundwork on a possible bid for the 2030 World Cup. Obviously, we're in the very infant stages of this announcement and of this development, but from covering the Euro in 2004 to seeing what the Nations League, even if it was just four matches, what that brought to Porto and to Guimarães, what would it be and what would it feel like and what would you feel covering a World Cup in Portugal and in Spain?
Oh, that would just be paradise. That would, absolutely amazing that would be. You know, there's been talk of this a few times before, of, you know, Portugal and Spain having a joint bid. I think it makes sense. You know, obviously the whole of Iberia and neighbouring countries, both strong, you know, very strong football cultures and fantastic stadiums. I think it's, in my opinion, it's the perfect host countries. So I would, and from a purely selfish point of view, you know, that would be just absolutely superb for me. I'd, you know, be going all the way around Portugal and Spain. So hopefully that happens, I suppose, a long way down the line. But, you know, when was the last time I was in Europe? I suppose Germany, wasn't it? Maybe 2006. So, I know it was in Russia, wasn't it? As well. So I don't know if that will happen or not, but you know, I think in terms, and just in terms of being good hosts, you know, lovely climate, good food, I think you know, Spain and Portugal are among two of the biggest you know, tourist destinations in the world. So from that point of view, I think they'd do a great job. So yeah, hopefully that will happen.
Well, you have a place to stay in the States in 2026 if you want to venture out west and
I might take you up on that.
Yeah, so you have a place here, and then we'll talk in 2030 if that Spain and Portugal bid comes
favor
to fruition. Absolutely, Tom. Again, can't thank you enough for everything you do for all us fans of the Seleção and everyone who follows the team and just appreciate all the work that you do and appreciate you coming on episode 20 of the Seleção podcast and obviously for our wonderful partnership between our podcast and your site and your brand. And thanks for joining us. And we will definitely talk soon.
Okay. No problem. Great talking, Danny. Speak again soon.
And a huge thank you to Tom Cunard of Portugal.net for joining us and recapping the Nations League final and the Nations League triumph that was for the Seleção. Of course, follow Tom on Twitter at Portugal1. And of course, get everything that you need in terms of Portuguese news for the Seleção and for all of Portuguese soccer at Portugal.net. One thing I wanted to reiterate before we get out of here is this. The cachet of the Nations League is still undetermined, and it won't be determined for a while. But make no mistake, and don't let anyone take this moment away from us, the fans of this team, the fans of the Seleção. International trophies are not easily won. They're not won very often. And for anyone to try to diminish or poo-poo this as something that isn't important, probably one isn't Portuguese. And doesn't have the fervor, the passion that we have for this team and for our culture. And what I say to you is this, that party in Port, na Avenida dos Aliados, that gave me goosebumps. That celebration brought tears to my eyes. There's a uh, There's a video that that the Selecao had put out on their social media of the national anthem, a Portuguesa, being sung by the estimated 50,000 people who joined the Selecao in celebrating there in Porto. This was a celebration, and it should be thought of as such. This is a positive for Portuguese soccer, for the Selecao, for our tiny nation of 10, 11 million. This is a competition, as Tom mentioned, that was not won by Germany or France or Spain or England. And folks can call this a glorified exhibition tournament. What I know is this, is that, and we talked about it with Tom, had England won it, had Switzerland won it, had the Netherlands won it, there would be a celebration in those countries as well. So why not us, and why not have the celebration that we had, not only in Port, but all over Portugal, all over the Azores, all over the States, in Canada, in Australia, anywhere that there is a Selecao fan. Why not celebrate, and why not enjoy this great time in our Selecao fandom, where we've now won two trophies in the last 3 years. So again, my thanks to Tom for recapping that, and just, yeah, celebrate this, be proud of this, as this does not happen very, very often. So before we let you go, just remember, like and follow us on our Facebook page, facebook.com/SelecaoPod. Remember to follow us on Twitter and on Instagram. We are at SelecaoPod. You can shoot us an email at SelecaoPod@gmail.com. Of course, make sure you check out our brand new website, SelecaoPod.com, where we have all the episodes there. Of course, make sure you are going to Portugal.net and just absorbing all of the information that Tom and his team are giving us on a daily basis on not only the Selecao, but on all things Portuguese football and soccer. And of course, continue to support not only my podcast, and I thank you so much for that, but make sure you're supporting every podcast that you could possibly find that is promoting and celebrating and covering the Selecao and Portuguese soccer, because this is a very, very special time in the Selecao's history, and I think it's just something that we need to absorb as much as we can, celebrate as much as we can, and enjoy as much as we can, because as I mentioned before, this does not happen very often, and for us to be in the middle of something that is as special as this time is, in getting the Euro in 2016, and getting this inaugural Nations League trophy in the hopes of defending in 2020, and who knows what happens in Qatar in 2022. Just enjoy this ride that we're on, and make sure that you absorb as much as you can from as many platforms as you can. And I humbly thank you for choosing us as part of that, as part of your coverage of this last song. So I will not yell too much because I want to make sure I properly set this up. But we leave you with the Portuguesa from the Avenida dos Aliados in Porto, as sung by the 50,000 fans that were there, along with the Selecao and everyone involved with the team. Força Portugal, campeões, campeões, nós somos campeões.
Yeah.